If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning. How are you, everybody? I hope everybody had a good weekend. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about mine. Friday, after the show, I went up to Front Sight and kind of crashed the two-day handgun skill builder. That's just, it's kind of a stay tuned up sort of a class. So I went there. Some folks that I know were up there wanted me to work with them. So I went up there and worked with a buddy of mine, a couple other dudes that were in from out of town, came in from California, and had a good time. And I tell you, every now and again, I take that course, and I take it, I'm right-handed, so I take it left-handed or with my support side. And I wish all the heck I would have done it again this time, and I'll tell you why shortly. Ended up having a good time on Friday. It's a two-day class. I did not go back Saturday. Had plenty of stuff to do on Saturday. I'd only planned on one day. So it worked out all right. It did. And I'm happy to be here this morning. I want to thank RJ Hinder for yet another great show. Welcome his audience here to join in, meld in with those 2A radio hardcore listeners. And hope everybody had just a fantastic, probably holiday shopping weekend for many of you. I know I went out and did a little bit of that with my girlfriend over the weekend. She did mainly internet stuff, but still got a lot of stuff done. So why is it that I like this whole support side two-day class? Well, I'll give you an example. When I used to be the guy out at Front Sight doing all of the staff-related training, keeping everything up to date, there's always a summer break for about 2 months, and it's because it's too damn hot. They used to run night courses out there. If you'd taken the course during the daytime, then you could take the nighttime version because there's no lights. It's just shooting, and you do it at night. And they would have it in usually under the lights, so it would be like just a bunch of tune-up at night when it's cooler, the sun's not killing you out there, and the lights are on. Then they ended up buying a piece of property in Alaska, and they have Frontside Alaska. So now if you want to take a course during the summertime, you travel to Alaska and go up to that facility because it's really only open about, 2 months a year. So anyhow, the nighttime courses were great. What we ended up doing was we ended up doing a number of staff-only courses during the night times, several weekends throughout the summer. And what I liked doing was one summer we started it with the support side, or if you're right-handed, the left side, shooting with your non-dominant hand, handgun skill builder for the staff. And it went so well that ended up doing it the last summer course of the weekend for the staff. The reason being, oftentimes, if you work long enough with students, you begin to forget what it's like to be a student, because you're out there all the time, you know what you're doing, and it's difficult sometimes to put yourself in the shoes of the students. Some staff members have a really hard time with that. So it is so good to do, all right, switch everything to the opposite side. Do all your shooting, your malfunction clearances, your reloads, everything off the support side, and let's see how you do. And as it turns out, that ends up getting the staff into the perfect mindset of, okay, now I remember what it's like to be a student. So that was a fantastic exercise. Plus, it keeps you up to speed shooting with your transition hand. So I will give you a little bit of information after the break why I wish I had done that with my left hand on Friday. And we will clear up some of the misnomers of support side shooting. So stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on cartilage.
Well, I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right, to fool around with a lot of exotic.
Hey,
Two-Way Radio with Bill Karnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. Welcome back, guys. So we're talking about support side shooting again. I'm right-handed, so I mean shooting with my left hand, vice versa if you're left-handed. So it's good training. Reason is, in case your right hand goes down, it might go down in a fight, you might suffer an injury, you never know. So you should be able to perform with your left hand. Now, there's a young kid out at Front Sight by the name of Noble. And at, I think, 15 years old, Noble passed the Handgun Combat Master's course and became the youngest in history Handgun Combat Master out of Front Sight. So he's been shooting left-handed ever since. I think Noble's probably 18 now, and he's been trying to shoot the master level competitively left-handed. So he'd be the first person certified both right and left-handed. There's another guy named Mark Flynn who tried that several years ago, many years ago. He had passed right-handed, and then was in the process of trying to pass it left-handed. And it got to the point where he did really well. He actually passed the test just below the master's test called the advanced test. And he had passed that left-handed. But the difference between the advanced test and the master's test is dramatic. Absolutely dramatic. It's almost like there should be yet another test in between to even it out. And a buddy of mine who lives out in Hawaii actually proposed that test one time. Of course, it got nowhere with the higher-ups. But anyhow, left-handed shooting is important if you're right-handed, your support hand shooting. Now, I realize that because I took the course on Friday. And then I should back up a little bit. About 8 months ago, I guess, my girlfriend and I, she wanted a dog. So we went to, there's just down the road about 4 miles from my house, 5 miles from my house, something like that. There is an old dog rescue. They don't have puppies in there. They have older dogs that have been rescued. People have been abandoning them or whatever. And they're a no-kill shelter. We found a dog that she had been there for 2 years and had, because of an injury before she ever even got to the shelter, had lost the use of her left rear leg. So she's essentially a three-legged dog. So we adopted her and renamed her to Cassidy, as in Hopalong Cassidy. And she's been just a wonderful dog. And I am not a fan of pit bulls because of the whole stereotype of pit bulls. There's been many I've come across and, like, absolutely no interest in them at all. This dog happens to be a pit bull. My girlfriend's a fan. This dog is probably the sweetest dog I've ever had. Just a sweet, sweet dog. And non-aggressive. I mean, people come in that she's never met before, and she just sits down and looks up at him, and you know, just starts licking. She barks until when they're outside the door, and then you open the door, and you let her, okay, everything's cool, and, you know, shake hands or give a hug, whoever's walking in, and she realizes there's a good person, and she's all over him like a little puppy. So anyhow, did the same thing last week with a cat. At the place that I go to actually buy my dog food. I don't go to like Walmart and buy dog food. I buy better stuff and I go to a local vendor. I'd rather support the little guy. And they had a cat there that looked just like one that I lost in my divorce of several years ago. So I'm like, wow, that's a cool cat. Pet the cat. Cat's cool. Take the cat home. Cat and dog are not exactly getting along. So anyhow, Friday night, after the class, ended up going out. Several of us went out. We had, dinner and some drinks at a local place and just had a good time. Go home, and my girlfriend decides that she wants to grab the cat and bring the cat into the bedroom. Now, the cat's been secluded in another bedroom, my grown daughter's old bedroom. The cat's been in there, and in the bathroom of that place, that bedroom, she has food, litter box, water, blah, blah, blah. And can stay in the bed, or more appropriately, the cat can stay under the bed, because, you know, that's what cats do when they're unfamiliar. So anyhow, she brings the cat into the bed. After we both fall asleep, this cat decides to get on the floor, and her and the cat decide to tussle a little, or her and the dog decide to tussle a little bit. I guess he and the dog, it's a boy cat. So we separate the dog and the cat, kick the dog out of the bedroom, and I go to grab the cat. And I have the cat by the nape of the neck, you know, how like a mother cat would carry it, because the cat's still a little bit worked up. But I just don't want to have any trouble, and that usually renders them pretty well, you know, still. Well, as soon as I open the bedroom door to take the cat to the cat's bedroom, there's the dog. And the cat wigs out, flips around, and ends up sinking its teeth into my right hand, not once, but twice. Sunk it once, hit a little bit of bone in one of the fingers, took it out, sunk again into the back part of my hand in the meat. And it was right behind, if you look at your middle finger and your index finger, for me that was my middle finger and my trigger finger, right where they meet between those knuckles, one tooth went there, another tooth went about 3/4 of an inch behind that, and then one of the back teeth got into the meat of the hand back about 2 inches behind the knuckle of my index finger and the knuckle of my thumb where it meets into the palm of my hand. So I have one big hole there and the other two up towards the other fingers. And, of course, cats' mouths are, if you ever get bit by a cat, you can pretty much guarantee that you're going to get an infection. So, sure enough, I end up cleaning this thing up the best I can, try to drain it, whatever I can do. The next day I get up, it's swollen, I am doing like the ice Epsom water, the salt water, trying to, and some mess and stuff, trying to dry any infection out of there. It's not going so great, so I get a hold of a guy that is an anesthesiologist I know of, and I'm talking with him, describing this whole thing as, yeah, you need some penicillin. So he calls in some penicillin, I go and I pick up the penicillin, I'm on that. So I'm on penicillin, vitamin C to try to get everything through this, crackers, and usually some ibuprofen to try to keep the swelling down and then try to keep the pain away. Where the pain is, my index finger, I cannot move my index finger, or aka trigger finger. And as I'm going through some schematics of the human hand, it would appear as though one of these teeth may have hit a nerve, and I may have nerve damage in my hand because of this cat bite. So here I am, rendered one-handed, and the hand that's not working is my shooting hand. And another thing that really sucks about this, not just the constant, and it's a very sharp pain that's in my finger, especially if my hand is above my heart where there's not much pressure going into it, and then I drop it down as I describe this, now I feel a lot of pain. As it comes down, and the pressure builds back into the finger, it hurts, and it really sucks. And it is constant. Of course, I've still been recovering from the shoulder or neck injury on the right side. It's almost like I just want to take a big hacksaw, start at the armpit, and cut up into the rib cage and just get rid of the entire right limb because it sucks right now. I don't know. I must have done something poor in the past where karma's getting back to me with all of this pain. I don't know. Anyhow, the thing is this coming weekend, one of the reasons I was taking this handgun skill builder course just for a day was to tune up, because this coming Sunday and Monday, I'm supposed to be testing for the Handgun Combat Master Certification, something I've been chasing for a few years, and I was warming up a little bit this weekend in anticipation of taking that. I believe my hopes and dreams of testing for the Master's Test this weekend, I believe those are completely shot, pardon the pun, down the tube. This penicillin is 10 days worth. It was my hand was so bad on Saturday night, in fact. My girlfriend and I, we went to Vegas, had dinner with my daughter and her new boyfriend, who was a Marine. Great kid. First time I had a chance to meet this guy named Cody. Good, good dude. Shoots expert in the Marine, which is excellent. He's done it the last couple of years. He's getting deployed in August. I'm sorry, in April. But good kid. Liked him a lot. Then we went to go see... We went to the Mirage downtown on the Strip. I shouldn't say downtown. Downtown and the Strip are different. On the Strip, went to the Mirage, to the brand new B.B. King's Blues Club, which had the grand opening the night before. A guy I went to high school and college with. Now, when I went to high school, I was in band. I played drums mainly, and along with some other rhythm section stuff. And I graduated high school 1 year early with high honors, and I ended up going to school to college on music and academic scholarships. So one of the guys I went to high school with, several of us from high school, ended up going to the same small college in Dodge City. We were recruited out there into the music department by a guy that we knew. So this guy, Chuck, and I played drums together for a couple of years in high school. And then I went to college in New Orleans for a bit, and then I went to Dodge City. And Chuck and I ended up out at Dodge City together. And so I haven't seen Chuck. I ran into him once, maybe 15, 16 years ago, just strolling through one of the local casinos. I was in there to have lunch, and his family lived not far, so I just happened to run into him. Other than that, I haven't seen him. So his band was playing, and we went and hung out. My hand was so swollen, it was ridiculous. I actually went home Saturday night and drained it as best I could on my own. The only surgery that I've ever had, I've had LASIK surgery, which isn't really surgery, and I've had my wisdom teeth pulled, which, again, isn't really truly surgery's idea. All the other surgeries I've ever had on my body, I've done myself. Just knowing what I do know about the human body and how things work, I kind of trust myself a little bit more than I do the so-called medical professionals, because they practice medicine. I want it to be right. So anyhow, I've been nursing and tending to this thing, and it entirely sucks. It's entirely terrible. I hate having to deal with it. And now I really realize how happy I am that I have done support hand training, because now I have to carry left-handed. I have one holster for my left hand. Happens to fit any number of probably three or four different Glocks that I own. So I'm on it. Now I'm carrying a Glock on my left side, along with everything else. It's weird. It's like my pants are tilted off to the left because I can't use my right hand to grab anything. I've transitioned my knife over there, my wall, everything's over on the left side, including a Glock. So there you go for support side shooting. We'll talk about it a little bit more after we come back. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
So we're talking about transitional shooting. Shooting, like if you're right-handed, then learning to shoot with your left hand. So specifically, I'm going to talk about handguns for now. However, this would run with any weapon system. The reason I'm going to stick to handguns is, generally, for most of us, if we're going to be armed and there's going to be an encounter, it's going to be because we are citizens carrying a handgun, or probably more appropriately, a concealed handgun, and that's what we need to use. So what happens if our right hand goes down or otherwise becomes injured, such as mine has, and I can't use it? I couldn't press a trigger all the way through with my right hand, literally, if my life depended on it. My finger's just plain stuck. It takes minutes to get this thing straightened out, and then minutes to get it curved into a relaxed position again. And it's tremendous amount of pain. There's all kinds of pressure in there. So now I have to use my left hand. Now, as a righty, my right hand has much, much more dexterity than my left hand does, because I do many more things with it, as most people do. I don't write well with my left hand. There's a lot of things. My left hand, I just don't do very well. As a matter of fact, Saturday, I had prearranged with Dave Champion, who has a Dave Champion show here at 3 o'clock Central, Monday through Friday. I had prearranged with Dave to come in. I'm a notary public, to notarize some forms that he needed for his office, for his business. So he gets a hold of me Saturday morning, and late Saturday morning, and says, are you going to be available to notarize these forms? And I told him, I said, I'm physically available, but I can't do it because I can't sign my name. My right hand is completely out of commission due to my cat attacking my hand. And he's like, are you serious? Absolutely, I'm serious. So I had to hook him up with another buddy who's a notary in order to get that done. And it didn't get done till yesterday. Luckily, with the time-sensitive issue Dave had, it needed to be done by today. So we got it done yesterday. But there's just many things that you cannot, that most people, unless you're truly ambidextrous, you cannot do with your support hand that you can do with your primary hand. So therefore, firearms training with it is very tricky, because you're not, usually your trigger finger, you get very aware with your firing side hand, with your dominant hand. Your trigger finger, you can train to get off the trigger and leave high up along the frame or even along the slide. with your support hand, you haven't really developed that dexterity. It doesn't always know to stay off the trigger. It just kind of sits there. The trigger's usually in a spot where when the fingers relax, it naturally rests there. Not a good deal. Of the four universal firearms rule, rule number three is keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. So that means keeping it up high outside of the trigger guard and up onto the frame where the frame and the slide meet generally. So, with that being said, dry practice with your support hand, oftentimes with a revolver, is a very good way to build up how to practice with that gun. You don't want to do it with a rimfire, like a .22, because you can actually damage the gun a little bit. But any centerfire, .38, .357, something like that. If you happen to have a centerfire revolver, and you can get a holster managed up for your left side, that is good training for getting the gun to where you can manipulate it. You can be able to fire it, and then you bring your other hand up there to manipulate it. Support hand shooting and clearing with just the support hand is something to practice as well. Now, you need to know all of the techniques before you do that. So with that being said, the 2A Radio 3-day handgun course will be March 19, 20, and 21st of 2010. March 19th, 20th, and 21st. That is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I am still trying to nail down one of actually three different ranges. I do have the dates together. Once I get the range nailed down, I will give you further information because all three ranges are many miles apart. So if you're going to come to that, I want you to be able to book a hotel room that's closer to the range. I'm trying to secure Boulder City Range, which is a nice range. It's away from Vegas. You don't have to worry about all the crowds. But Vegas is close enough. You can travel in there and, you know, party hardy and come back out, or stay in Vegas and then just come out in the mornings, leave in the afternoons. So March 19, 20, 21 are the dates for the 2A Radio handgun course. I will have more information up on the website, which is 2aradio.com, where you can actually sign up and get everything together for that. That'll all be available on the website once we, again, secure the actual range. There's some paperwork and some insurance papers and things to do before we do that. So just wanted to let you know that is going to be the dates. Mark that on your calendar. March 19, 20, 21, 2010, the 2A Radio 3-day handgun course. Myself and several other highly qualified instructors I've worked with over the years, for many years, that I trust. And I have the luxury of being able to hand pick all of the staff members that work with me. When I used to work out at Frontside, I would be assigned whoever was out there. And in any industry, you get some people that are above average, some people that are average, and some people that are below average. So I am lucky enough to be able to hand select all of the above average people that I've worked with over the years that no longer work out there. Many of them have left for one reason or another, whatever that may be, and now I have my ability to hand pick those people who are just top notch. So you're probably going to get one of the finest assembled staffs you could ever imagine at any given firearms course. So there you go. Mark that on your calendar. Again, March 19, 20, 21. Everything will be available on 2aradio.com. Stay tuned, guys. I'll be right back. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. So last week I told you about a story in Colorado where the University Regents, I believe it's called, decide the Board of Regents banned guns at Colorado University. the CSU Board of Governors. They voted unanimously on Friday this last week to ban concealed weapons that had otherwise, if you had a concealed weapons permit, you were allowed to carry on the CSU campus. However, the presidents of the Colorado State System have until February to submit a weapons plan that complies with what is the new CSU Board of Governors policy that they voted unanimously to disarm everyone on campus. Now, with that being said, at Colorado State, which is where your concealed weapons were banned, now the University of Colorado went a few steps further and cracked down on another nefarious threat called Nerf guns. Now, there is a game which college students play across the country. It's called Humans versus Zombies. And what happens is you end up with these kids that go out there, and they have these orange and green kind of a toy Nerf weapon. They're simulated guns, and they shoot the spongy Nerf balls. Okay, well, those were banned at the University of Colorado because they're a toy gun. The game, what it ends up with, it involves student zombies attempting to eliminate the human students by pelting them with Nerf balls or socks. You can throw a sock at somebody. Once a human has been tagged, he becomes a zombie and must wear a bandana around their head. So that bandana makes them, notates them as being a zombie. Humans can stun zombies for 15 minutes by tagging them with a Nerf ball or a sock. And the zombies have to hit at least one human student every 48 hours or they starve. And now then they're eliminated from the game. So the game wins when all the humans have been turned into zombies or all the zombies have starved. All of this can take days, if not weeks. Okay, the Colorado University spokesman, Branson Hilliard. That sounds like a good name for somebody who's higher up in the university system, doesn't it? Branson Hilliard. He said that students cooperated fully, replacing the Nerf guns with balled up socks, and even taking it upon themselves to hang flyers in dormitories, alerting players to leave their Nerfs at home. The game started December 1st and ended a few days later. Still, it didn't take long for cries of liberal killjoys to ring out across the internet, thanking all of these buttheads. I had to consider the words to use there. The buttheads from taking away their Nerf guns. The contrast was especially stark given the headlines this week that the CSU believed to be the last college outside Utah that allowed students to carry concealed weapons on campus with a permit, removed that ability. So again, the CSU Board of Governors voted unanimously Friday to ban concealed weapons. Presidents of the Colorado State System have until February to submit a plan that complies with the new policy. At Colorado University, the ban on Nerf guns isn't new. The Board of Regents banned simulated weapons from campus years ago, not just in time to suck the fun out of last week's game. It's been there for a while. Here's a quote. No guns of any kind, real or toy, from air rifles to paintball guns to Nerf guns, are allowed on campus under the laws of the Regents, said Joe E. Roy. Joe E. Sounds like Cook E. Jar. Or Joe E. Roy, chief of police at the University of Colorado Police Department. We are simply enforcing a long-standing policy, not inventing a new category of enforcement. The debate over Nerf guns isn't limited to Boulder, since human versus zombies first started popping up on campuses about 5 years ago. Colleges have wrestled over whether to allow students to pack Nerf heat or not. Opposition intensified after the deadly 2007 shootings in Virginia Tech. So, now, if you happen to want to commit some sort of a huge crime wave, going out and just basically shooting up any place that you want, all of the college campuses in Colorado are now, previously they were not game. Now they're game. The Colorado State System, the Colorado State Universities. Colorado University is not a state-sponsored school, so they could run their rules however they wanted. But all the Colorado State schools now fall into the same category of nothing but a gun-free zone, meaning a target-rich, victim-filled environment for those that would cause harm. Now, it disturbs me greatly that things like this happen. To try to combat gun violence, what they do is they try to take guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens. That's like having a wildfire and having the people around there not able to be able to let a backfire to stop it from encroaching on their land. Or simply not fight the fire at all. It's like taking all of the different people that have the ability to hook up a compressor to their swimming pool and help, you know, toss down a wildfire that's coming up into their backyard and telling them, you can't do that. Only the fire department can come do that. You're not allowed to have sprinkler systems. You're not allowed to have any kind of a fire hose. You know, if we're not there and we're not using a fire hydrant, you can't fire one up and grab your spanner wrench and open it up and go to town. You can't do that. Only the firefighters can. And if they're not able to make it up to where you are, too bad. Lose all your home and property. Okay, that's kind of the same mentality. You fight fire with fire. All right? If somebody brings a baseball bat or a knife to you and you happen to have a gun, well, guess what? They are underarmed, which is fine. Because if you can articulate that you are in imminent, you're in fear from an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury to yourself or someone around you, from someone who could easily administer that death or serious bodily injury by whatever means they have, and a bat and a knife can certainly do that. That's a walk in the park on that one. And you have a gun, and that person shows opportunity, ability, and intent to commit death or serious bodily injury to you or someone else. That's the way the whole legal thing goes. Well, then you're justified in shooting them. If they bring a gun, you don't have much opportunity to use anything else but a gun. So let's say that some crazed SOB decides to walk onto any campus. Let's say it's going to be one of these Colorado State campuses, now that they used to be able to have guns, but they can't anymore. And somebody even brings just a single-shot handgun. Just load one, shoot, load one, shoot, load one, shoot. Okay? Because it's not like you need to have some sort of, mounted machine gun to mow people down because everybody's unarmed. All right. Well, in that case, right there, the Board of Regents bear all of the responsibility for the liability of everyone's safety across the board. If one person who has had a concealed weapons permit or has a concealed weapons permit, but they're not carrying while on campus because it's against the rules now, and they become the victim of a crime, every single regent member, everybody who sits on the Board of Regents, bears personal and professional liability for having disarmed that victim. It's just the way it goes. Now, already there should be a lawsuit. Everybody who is a gun-toting, CCW card-carrying member of the armed citizenry of Colorado that has any business whatsoever on the CSU campuses should band together, find yourself a good, solid Second Amendment, pro-Second Amendment attorney, and you should file suit against all the Board of Regents for taking away your ability to protect yourselves. Okay? That is an inalienable right, and they are, well, making it alienable. They're taking away your right to self-protection, which no one has the authority to do. So, that's who you need to sue. And you need to sue them for everything they've got, everything they stand for. Find out the other organizations that these Board of Regents sit on. Find out if they sit on the Board of Directors for any companies. Find out what organizations are volunteer organizations that they belong to. Find out absolutely everything that these butt heads do. Every single thing, every organization they're involved in, every company that they do any kind of business with. and you absolutely blanket them with information stating, look, this person is also a Board of Regents on the Colorado State University. They voted for taking away the security away from the people who are on the campuses. They have left us as unarmed, intended victims to any one single intended would-be malicious individual to ever walk onto any of the campuses. These regents, this person that you're involved in that does all these other things, has condoned crime and potentially mass murder by doing this. And do you really want to be affiliated with them? And you hit these people where they live, because they've already hit everybody on the CSU campuses where they live if they happen to carry concealed. Right? They've got a concealed weapons permit. They've gone through their training. Okay, they're good to go. And these CSU Board of Regents have gone so far as to hit them where they live. Now it's time to hit these guys where they live, where they enjoy spending their time, effort, energy. You need to hit them back. You need to absolutely flood the different companies and organizations and groups in which these individual Board of Regent members belong. Flood them, show up, do whatever you can to say, look, you took away my right to self-protection. And if you think you have the ability, and it's going to go along with if you believe that you are going to actually get away with taking away my right to self-protection, I am going to make your life hell. We are going to stay in your faces and cause you so much heartache. Because the other option is we do nothing and end up being harmed or killed because of your sitting on your ass in your lofty chair passing some sort of ridiculous gun ban on me when you don't even know me. But now, somehow or another, since you believe that you can be safe wherever you are in your life, that maybe I'll be safer being unarmed. Well, that's not going to go. Your life is going to be absolute hell until this is overturned. We're not going to stand idly by for this. Now, if I happen to be in the CSU arena, I would lead this charge. I would lead this charge unmercifully so. I would get onto the college radio stations and do things like what I'm doing right now. I would put up flyers, I would talk, I would do everything I possibly could, organize, and make the lives of these regents absolute hell by letting everybody in their world know that they are rights thieves. They haven't the authority to take the rights away. Nobody does. And that they somehow believe that lending everybody in the CSU system to be a victim is somehow lofty. It's somehow this big lofty goal, lofty idea. As if some woman laying dead in an alley, raped and strangled with her own pantyhose, is somehow morally superior because she was unarmed to a woman who's explaining to the police how she delivered that fatal shot to her attacker. Who is morally superior? The dead woman who was brutalized and the last minutes of her life made an absolute hell on earth. Is she somehow morally superior to the one who defended herself and shot her would-be attacker who ended up dead from those bullets? Well, evidently in Colorado, the Board of Regents of the CSU system believe so. They believe a dead student or faculty member is somehow going to be morally superior because they were unarmed than one that was armed and stopped some sort of a crime spree or a rape or a mugging or even a mass shooting, such as the one that happened at Virginia Tech in a gun-free zone. Folks, do your history when you go after these people. It's very simple to look back and see all of the different mass shootings that happened because almost every one of them was in a gun-free zone. Even in a lot of the businesses, those companies had policies against having guns in the workplace. So all of these gun-free zones happen to be the same places where all the mass shootings happen. Now, there might be people who plan to do mass shootings at other places, but they never get away with it. As a matter of fact, outside of these gun-free zones, you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone who shot more than three people before they were stopped. Inside the gun-free zones, they usually get eight or more. In the case of Virginia Tech, it was 33. And this guy walked past hundreds of people. If any one of those hundreds of people, if only 3% carry a gun, and this guy walked past 300 people, you got 9 or 10 that are going to have been armed and could have stopped that Virginia Tech rampage in its infancy. So now Colorado State System is going to be left in the same sort of predicament as the Virginia Tech system. The only schools left in America that you can carry? The University of Utah system. Transfer. There you go. After making these people's lives hell. Stay tuned. I'll be back.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, folks, let's say you do have to pull a gun to defend your life and shoot somebody. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, that person died, I killed them. Actually, not true at all. You shot them. It was the bullets that killed them. So keep that in mind. When you shoot somebody, you don't, and they die, you don't kill them. The bullets actually killed them. So you can get that off of your conscience. And the other person is also the one that pushed the situation to that end. Now, in a number of police jurisdictions, If one citizen defends their life with a gun and someone else dies, even if they don't die, if they just end up in the going to the hospital, but if you pull out a gun and you fire to defend your life or that of someone else, in some jurisdictions they have essentially a policy where you're going to get booked. Now, if nothing else, they're just going to process you through suspicion of some illegal use of a firearm. So what they do is they'll process you. You're going to get hooked up. Get put in the back of the car, go to jail, get photographed, fingerprinted, everything. Just cooperate. Some departments do that. Not all of them do. Las Vegas Metro does not always do that. If they go there and they can look and see, okay, well, this person defended themselves, and that's fine. They do not go to jail. Now, a story out of Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix police on Saturday released a man who told them that he had fatally shot another man in self-defense. Now, a 24-year-old man called police about 3:15 a.m. on Saturday to report a shooting at a Northwest Phoenix apartment. Arriving, officers found a 27-year-old man dead of gunshot wounds in the apartment. Now, police said that the man told officers he shot the other man in self-defense. After being processed and being questioned, he was released pending a further investigation. Now, nobody's name was released in this. But that's just to go to show you that you may very well be justified in shooting, but you may get processed and questioned and then released later. So just understand that. If that happens, don't go against the system. Don't buck the system. You don't have to be happy with it. I wouldn't be happy with it. You shouldn't be happy with it. Nobody'd be happy with it. But you have to understand and realize that the police want to get everything sorted out. You might know exactly what happened. But when cops arrive on the scene, They have no idea. All they know is they might be seeing one or two or three people on the ground laying there and you standing there with a gun in your hand. So who's going to garnish their attention? Well, it's going to be the person standing there with a gun in their hand where the other people are bleeding or already bled out. So just realize, cooperate. All right? That's what we call problems 2 and 3. Problem 1 is a bad guy. Problem 2 is when you have to deal with the cops when they show up. Problem 3 is any potential civil liability. So keep that in mind. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. You can email me, bill@2aradio.com. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour, coming up next, followed by Ernest Hancock.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.